Welcome to the Boost Podcast with me, Graham Farmer. This week I'm joined by Andrew Lees. Andrew is a social media manager. He knows a lot about social, so we're going to go in depth into social media this week. We're going to talk about Twitter, we're going to talk about live streaming, we're going to talk about Instagram, all the best practices for artists. We're going to find out more about him. He's worked for some big brands like Ibiza Spotlight and Fuse, to remember a few. This week it's a really long chat. We go so in depth. Buckle in. Let's jump in. Hey, Andrew. How are you?
Hello, Graham. Thank you for having me.
That's okay. How's your lockdown been?
Do you know what? I actually think I'm coming out of it a better person.
Do you?
Yeah, I think I've grown up a little bit during it, and I think I've got out of the bubble. Because I think you go from being underappreciated, overworked, and then I was working for a company before lockdown, actually 3 days before the furlough deadline.
Fuck.
So if I hadn't have got that, I'd have been fucked. And like, I went from being like waiting for invoices every month, being owed money, to just getting paid to play Football Manager for 3 months. And like, exactly. That's quite, I think like the company I was working for before this all happened said, come out of it and learn. Like whether this company exists afterwards or whatever it is, just come out of it and feel like you've made progress, because we're all so knackered all the time in this industry.
Yes.
So I actually feel like it was 3 months that I needed, 4 months that I needed. And like, I took a lot of looking in the mirror. It took a while, because there was always tomorrow, and tomorrow was never different. Saturday was the same as Tuesday. Right. So I think I've come out of it with a brighter perspective about who I am now.
That's good.
Rather than being like, God, I'm knackered, and I've got this deadline, or I've got this party, and I've got that party is going to lead into another party, and then all of a sudden it's Tuesday and you're like, shit, I've got so much work to do.
Yes, those that I guess that's helped a lot of people, than not being parties. As much as it's sad, I think there's some businesses that I've seen that have really grown because certain people have not been partying.
Yeah, and do you know what? I think artists are actually starting to appreciate how important their like socials are. That's obviously the place I work.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I've deserted this platform. And if I don't talk about this now, then no one's going to know what I'm doing, rather than it just being like gig, 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 campaign, gig, 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 campaign. Like this, and do you know what? One of the best things about lockdown is there is no more Solomon after party videos.
And there is, that's right, there is, there's no more. That content dried up.
And like, obviously, I think it's amazing what all these techno blogs have done for the scene. They've put like a brand new way of sharing content. But it is great to not see Solomon and Peggy Goo playing parties.
And the same video on the same 10 pages of the same video.
It will come back, and I would love to see it, because I think Solomon's an incredible artist. He's done amazing. But it did get a little bit like techno big main stage after party. And it was a little bit like the scene needed a little bit of a break. Not this much of one, but it needed a little bit of one. And I think every member of the industry will feel like they've actually come out of this as refreshed.
I hope so.
Yeah, I think, do you know what? The people like Circler and people like Ajuna Deep and Dirty Bird and all these people have gone, right, Twitch, YouTube, live streams, let's support artists that way. Mm. Defected. What they did at the beginning of lockdown was insane.
Yeah.
Like, I can't even imagine putting together campaigns like that. Never mind every week with 12 different artists. Like, respect to Defected for that, because like, it was all of a sudden, it's like having everything taken away from you straight away, and Defected was like, no, hold on a minute, there's actually a way we can keep it going for a little bit before it got repetitive and everyone was like, we've watched this for 6 weeks in a row now.
Yeah. And like, and all the other artists had bought the webcams and worked out how to do it by then, so it's like you could just watch you ever by then, it was nice.
I think that's at the beginning of it. I don't think anyone expected it to be this long.
No, I certainly didn't.
And well, like,
I remember a point when it was like when the kids had just stopped being at school, and I was like, and then I heard something online that said, oh, they might be off till they go back for the new year. And I was like, surely not the new school year. I was like, surely not. It can only be like 12. It'll be up to the summer and then we'll go back. No, it did. It lasted until September, which was so much fun, but also so tiring.
Like, I've said this to everyone I've spoken to about this whole thing. 31 years old. I've just moved out of London. I've got my London deposit back, which was like getting 2 months' wages.
Yeah.
Like, and I've lost, obviously, I got made redundant from one position.
Yeah.
It happens. Clients come and go. It's the nature of our industry. It just kind of felt like that.
Yeah.
But I'm so glad, and I have a lot of respect for you for being a home dad. I'm so glad that I don't have a kid between the ages of like 5 and 10 who doesn't understand why they're now at home for 6 months.
Yeah, it was hard.
And I'm so glad, I have got so much respect for people in our industry who have to having to look after adult babies, DJs, and then having to look after real life kids.
Yeah.
Who want their attention, and you're having to split your work day and work till God knows what time to make sure you're still doing your 8 hours or still doing your company.
Yeah.
Like, got a lot of time for that, and I'm so glad that that's where I'm not in my life. Really honest.
It was a fun period, let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
So let's just, we've kind of gone on a bit, but let's just tell the audience who you are. If you can just introduce yourself and say what you do and where you've come from, and let's find out about your origin story.
I'm Andrew Lees. My previous work that people probably know me for, if they actually know me personally, would be IB for Spotlight, Fuse and International Music Summit. So I'm from Stoke-on-Trent, and once upon a time I was working at Alton Towers in their conference centre. That's where my love of events came from, because I actually used to just be backstage and put them together. And I was like, oh, well, there, one minute. I'm a writer as well, so why don't I go to events and review them? Mm-hmm. That's how I started. And that's how it was like. A lot of people get in this industry for free music from PR. So I was like, guest list. Like, that was what I wanted. I wanted to go for free festivals, and all I had to do was write an article about it. Mint. Like, that sounds ace. What a great job that is.
I did exactly the same. Because before Data Transmission, not many people know this, I actually started another blog a long, long time ago. And I actually interviewed Judge. My first ever interview was Judge Jaws. And it was literally to get into an event, some pre-event coverage.
Nice. So my first interview was Youssef.
Nice.
And I used to go to Circus a lot. Obviously, I'm from Stoke. So like the best thing about Stoke-on-Trent when you're like 18 to 21 is the M6 North.
Yeah.
Because you've got Sankey. I had Sankey's Warehouse Project, Circus, like Zootech, nice. Drop the Mustard. Like Leeds had like Butterside Up, Basics, all these incredible parties. And I'm actually really glad that I never went to university in Leeds, because I would have turned into a basement DJ who has parties that don't end. Like, I'm so glad that I was able to go up to Leeds on a Friday, come back on a Monday, and it's still not be going on Thursday, and then the weekend starts again. I'm so glad that I didn't go to university in Leeds. Like, Leeds Met was my top uni that I wanted to go to, not for lit events, just because their sports campus was insane.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that that's not the route that I took. yeah, I think being from Stoke-on-Trent, Ibiza was Hollywood to me.
Right.
You go there and all of a sudden you've got 15 parties a day. Everyone who's like, that was a good time in Ibiza when you could still promote on the streets before all these regulations came in.
What year was that?
So my first summer was 2011, and that was literally just go out for opening parties and stayed. And I stayed for 6 weeks and then came back, skint, and like went to uni, had to sell my iPod to put petrol in my car.
Like, love that.
Like that was desperate times.
Love that.
And then like worked. I went back in 2013 at the end of the summer and worked as for Pulse Radio as an intern.
Nice.
And got to review like Circa Loco closing party, and I was like, Jesus Christ, this is actually a job. Like, this is possible. Like, this is possible. I think it's like that moment when everyone hears their record played on the radio, or it gets support from a big artist. That was my moment. Mm. Like, when you realise, I remember when Seth Troxell tweeted me saying thanks for the review, and I was like, fuck, Seth Troxell just tweeted me. And that was my bit of dopamine, like what Taylor Swift fans must get if they'd like touch her at a concert.
Yes.
That was my kind of like, this is actually possible. Like,
I always find it quite funny when you get an email from a famous artist and you're like, and it comes up and their name comes up in your email address and you're like, hello, what do they want?
Yeah, that's it's an interesting world, isn't it? Because I think this whole, when I worked in Ibiza, one of the first artists I ever interviewed was Pete Tong at Ushuaia, and like, I was sat there in front of him listening, and it's like, oh my god, this is the voice from the radio. Yeah. And I'm sat in front of him listening to him, and he's answering my questions. Like,
yeah, that's what I'm saying with that. That's what, because I had my first interview was Judge Jaws, and he was literally on the radio, and it was just like, and I spoke to him on the phone, and it was just like, I'm speaking to the guy on the radio. It's like in my head, that's like weird.
Yes, like, I think this industry really does that to you. There's no celebrity. There's like, there feels like there is, because like Seth Troxler walks backstage past you and you're like, oh my god, that's Seth.
Yeah.
But like, there isn't a celebrity. There isn't like, no one's doing any film premieres. There's not red carpets before they walk into events. It's literally backstage alleyway, walk into green room that's a shithole, and then they walk up some stairs and they're in a club, and then they're just like the center of attention. That's it. And I love that. Whereas like, I imagine if you're at Coachella and you're playing main stage, you have your own porter cabin and you have your own rider, to the point of like, where you can't even... I worked at Orton Towers, as I said, and we weren't even allowed to look at Jessie J in the eye when she did a concert. That was one of her things on the rider. And you're like, what the fuck? Like, can't even look at her in the eye or else she gets anxious. I'm like, I'd rather be the person behind the bar, I think.
I totally would have looked her in the eye.
Yeah.
Just for shits and giggles.
Yeah. So, yeah, mad world, really. I've got a bit of a...
Like... So what was you doing with... So you were writing for Spotlight, and then what was you doing...
So when I went out there, I went from ticket seller to working for Ibiza Club News, and that's when I got my first year season fully professional working. And then, fortunately, my sister got ill and then passed away in February, which was a massive thing. And then Spotlight knocked on my door and was like, do you want to come work for us? And like, that was like, I remember being a 19-year-old kid going out and doing my first season, and Spotlight, I used to print this calendar out and put it on my wall. Because like, it wasn't a day of like, it's not like an iPhone 10 now. Yeah. You still had to like go online, kind of use the internet cafes a little bit back then.
Yeah.
To know what parties were coming on, or else you just used the posters on the streets of the West End.
Yeah.
So, like, Spotlight to me was like dream job.
Yeah.
And I got to work for them for 4 years at 26, I think I was, and 24, maybe 25 to 28. That's cool. 4 summers, 2 winters, and like, didn't do all of them in an Ibiza. I did quit eventually because I did it from like in and out a little bit. But yeah, that was a dream job. That's the best time I've ever had in this industry. Like, just the opportunities you used to get. Like, you used to have a Cocoon season card, and like, you used to have most Tuesday mornings off because it was just like work balance over the summer. Yep, your Monday night out is your Monday night out. And if you're not reviewing it, we'll see you on Wednesday.
Yeah. Nice.
Like, that was such an opportunity. And like, coming back out of that, when I went full-time in London, that was the biggest adjust point. Like, you have to wait till Friday and Saturday to go out.
Yes.
When you live there, your Fridays and Saturdays are when you go to the beach and you relax and you do nothing, because you've been out Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
It's almost like the flip, your working days.
Yeah, that was it. Like, weekends on a Saturday, I probably did more work on a Saturday than I did on Tuesday and Wednesday. Because you like, you play catch up a little bit, but then you also know that what you've got coming is Sven's playing at Cocoon again, or Dixon's playing at Cocoon again. And it's like mad. And then August comes along and you hibernate because there's too many people on the island.
Mm.
So yeah, that's a little bit.
And then you started doing social for socials, I guess, and getting into...
Yeah, so I interviewed Enzo,
yep.
And Tilgusa, who owns Fuse, and that was like my first ever time I introduced him, and I proper fanboy, and I was like, I love your party. Like, I used to come down from Stoke to London every Sunday and used to tell him that I just used to like finish work at 6. I used to work in the bar in the conference center, and I used to just, I was awake and I was like, right, I've actually gone through the point of being tired. I just got on a train and go to Fuse and then come back.
Nice.
And then like, I used to tell them about that, and I got introduced to the people who own Fuse, and it was like the beginning of their summer when they started to do space.
Mm.
I got really close with the lads, and obviously used to go to all four parties that they did, and then that's how Fuse became a client, really. Like, I literally just went from entry. It was a completely, like, I was doing the socials for Spotlight, and that was kind of what I did, but then it was like, oh, we've got four parties out here, do you want to come and help us do these?
Yeah.
And then that's what led me moving to London, because I was like, oh, actually, I've already got a client in London. Why not have a go at that full time and see if I can bring in more? Mm-hmm. And then IMS knocked, which was just like, what an opportunity it is to work for IMS. Because you're like, you think you know the industry when you work out in Ibiza. And then you're introduced to everyone in Berlin and LA and New York. And you're like, yeah, these own blockchain companies. And you're like, Christ, like, I don't even know what blockchain is. But if you're going to be at IMS, let's, like, and it was really like, IMS is probably the best thing I've ever done, because it was like, begins the season, it brings it together, the clubbers and the industry side, which is, I've gone from clubber to industry, and like just working on a campaign where you're working to market to people like you who are in data transmission, to then people that's like 18 and wants to go and rave in a castle.
Yeah.
There's so much opportunity there.
Yeah.
Like, you can, you obviously have to speak in a very professional tone, but why wouldn't you want to come and party in a castle?
Exactly.
Like,
I love when that castle.
When you market that, it's so easy, because the pictures do it all for you.
Yeah.
And the experience of going to this event does it all for you. Whereas it's harder to market a 250 capacity event in Nottingham or Stoke or London, where you've got such a shoestring budget, than it is to market Dull Villa.
Yeah.
And do that many tickets, because 50% of the tickets are done by just announcing it.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah, because the lineups will be killer, and like, and the venue, and they've always got those nice drone videos where it's like, where it just looks amazing, and there's lights and fireworks and explosions.
Yeah.
And it just looks, and it looks obviously great up there.
And like, I think something that I probably struggled with a lot over the last 18 months is, when you've done that, Dull Villa, how else, what else do you do? Like, Dull Villa seems like that opportunity when you've got 10 years experience. I did it off four. Like, but because I had been the event 3 years in a row, I knew what Spotlight did for IMS. So I could play off. I was working for both at the same time.
Nice.
So like, that was, obviously you have the opportunity and go, right, we've been announcing it. What is Spotlight going to do that's going to help me enhance this client? And then what is IMS going to do to help me enhance to sell tickets for Spotlight? So it was a dream. Like, you don't get that very often when you work in like this industry. You don't get to control both narratives.
Yeah. Unless it's your own, like your, I guess it's your own event with a separate brand name, but then you've got the blog platform behind it as well.
It's kind of like owning your own venue, but doing your own event in your own venue, knowing you're going to hit tickets and the bar.
Yes.
That's a dream, right?
Yeah, that's what we did a long time ago. That was fun.
Yeah, so like, that's probably the highlight I've ever done. And I think that I will talk about that. I sold out on a castle event with Sven Bath headlining.
That's cool.
That's like my Mixmag cover to a PR.
Yeah.
Like, that's something that I'd frame if I could. Do you know what I mean?
And then what are you doing? What's the plan now? What are you been up to now?
So I have started a company called Socially Sound.
Yeah.
And it is more about being how, there's two sides to it. There is how you are personally on social media.
Yeah.
Because I think personally, a lot of people, ever since Brexit in the UK, it feels like everywhere you go online is an argument.
I agree.
Even if you're just posting an Instagram story and you're just going on there to do it, you see like millions of people discussing how you're wrong, or no, you're not right, and oh no, it's with an apostrophe S. Like, fucking, like, people are using social media wrong. And we're coming off angrier than we go on.
Yes.
So there's that side, and that's how where I was in February. I was using Twitter wrong, which I wrote an article about, which you may have read.
I've read it, and it's cool. I want to dig into that a little bit in a minute, so.
So then the other side of it is, obviously, artist consultancy and client-based work.
Yep.
But then that is also focused on how them artists are using their own socials.
Cool.
And then how much time are they spending on it? Like, you know, the old 80-20 marketing, promoting kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I read this article from an example called Marketing Examples, which if you don't subscribe to, you should, because it's just and he wrote a Twitter campaign or a Twitter thread on the rise of Lil Nas X. Mm-hmm. And the first line of the article was, most artists think like failed startups. They spend too much time creating and not enough time promoting. And that hit me so much because that was my first attempt at a business. I spent so much time working for other people that I never went working on my own music or working on my own words that I never even thought about how I'm going to scale.
Yeah.
And like, that's where I think I'm at now is I'm thinking business plan first rather than going, oh my God, yes, I work for your record label. I've got this record from 10 years ago. Rather than just being excited all the time. I've got like, and I think that's just down to experience of industry one, failure two, what do I actually care about now? Because it's not that kid who was 23, just wanted guest list. I am now looking at how do I buy a house?
Yeah.
Like, kind of thing. That's my kind of attitude. So that's
I feel like I've been through the same. It's been like, when we started, it was like, I can offer you this. And you'd go, yeah, great. And now it's like, I can offer you the same. And I'm like, I don't want that. I don't care. Yeah. I don't care about your thing that you're trying to promote with this pitiful. Like, it's my time that you want off me. And I'm really not going to give you that.
So like what I've started doing is I've actually taken my social media as like a priority.
Yeah.
Because I had a conversation with a life coach a year ago and she knew my girlfriend. So she knew a little bit about me, but it's like, right, before I'd even first 2 minutes of the conversation was I've Googled you and I found nothing about you online. And I was like, yeah, but I've worked for Spotlight and I've worked for Fuse. And it's like, yeah, but I don't know what IB for Spotlight and Fuse are. So imagine I took that word, that's two sentences, and she leveled me. Yeah. And like, you probably know this, all your work comes from your own personal client, your own Facebook, or that artist manager has seven artists and you've worked with two and they're going to offer you the next two.
Yeah.
Or they've just launched a new label, new event series, new Instagram page, help us do it. That's where all my work has come from. It's been that. And what this kind of campaign, what working in full-time jobs does is it eliminates you from that like bubble of like, right, I've got this really cool thing, I'm going to go to this person. I was on that list, whereas I've disappeared off that list to a lot of people, I think, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but it also helps me work. If you do a lot of favors in this industry, and now the favors have stopped because I've got no platform to deliver them on, or I'm not living on an island where I can come to space tonight.
Yeah,
like I've lost that, and I think that's actually quite a refreshing place to be because it's allowing me to recreate myself a little bit.
Yeah, do you know we had exactly the same. Like when it came to promoting events and event budgets, Data Transmissions slipped off of people's lists, and that was in about March last year. And refreshingly for this year, I had to again reposition and rethink and what do we want to achieve and what we want to do, and that's obviously helped us get through this year because
there are so many redundancies happening in our industry now that if you've worked for Broadwick Live for 7 years, you don't have a personal website, you don't have a deck that's done everything that you've done because you're just so reliant on that being who you are. And like, it took me a long, I left Ibiza Spotlight for personal reasons. I was working in Ibiza, but living in London. And it was like my head, I just wanted to live in work in the same place I was living. But then like, it took me a long time to recover from not having that client. And like, I think I've used this phrase before, you can peak too early in your career, especially when you're freelance, because and I remember coming off the back of my first ever Ibiza season, a good friend said to me, I don't want to feel invisible. I don't just want to go back to working in a bar. And like, we're all now at that point where that might be the solid reality for a lot of us, unless we reinvent ourselves and come up with a new idea of how to help artists. Because it's not, as I spoke before, gig campaign, big stage festival confetti. That's going to get you 1,000 likes, 10,000 likes. That doesn't exist anymore. So how can you help artists go from like 10,000 streams to 25,000 streams or 10,200 vinyl sales, which could be the difference between them having to make a commercial track to make some money or whether they can stay who they are? And I think that's where I'm at now. I think a lot of artists need a little bit different from, say, someone who works on social media.
Mm.
And that's where I'm at. And that's what I'm offering to people. And I'm not just coming in and go, yep, amazing, let's go and get this big budget music video. It's how can we work on zero pence and how can we keep your engagement where you want it to be? Because you haven't got that big music video, music raw clip anymore, and you're not going to have that for 6 months.
At least.
So, yeah, and that's just like Caprice Festival, like, is probably the only festival that I've seen, and even that has had 8 artists on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, there was going to be a lot of artists, I think, now, if they thought events were going to be back and AD was going to happen and they haven't planned, I think they're in for a bit of a shock.
I think if you've not jumped on the live, if you didn't jump on the live stream thing 6 months ago and build an audience and start building audiences, it's just like, and understanding the platforms and understanding what you can do with it and what the limitations are. And now, because if you didn't do that 6 months ago and you now know them and you're now starting to push the limitations, like I watched the Dirty Bird thing the other week. It's incredible.
Yeah, this camp that they're doing.
Yeah, incredible.
Really cool, right?
Like them, they're making money. They've got audience interaction. They've got a team thing where eggs go across the screen, and you have to, certain teams win each day, and incredible.
Yeah, and like Aduna Deep did the same, which is obviously Above and Beyond's kind of deep house side, and they recreated Above and Beyond's Essential Mix from 10 years ago and got 250,000 viewers peak.
Amazing. Amazing.
But like, how many people could recreate their Essential Mix from 10 years ago? Like, them artists are so far disconnected from what they did 6 weeks ago. Or, take Sasha as a really good example. When I worked with Myrad for 6-8 weeks on it, his fan base is still there from 98.
Yeah.
And they're still living and breathing everything he did from 98. Yep. If Sasha went and did a live stream where he recreated, is it Northern Lights? What was it called?
Northern Exposure.
I should know that. But if he recreated that in a live stream, imagine the viewers.
I know, it'd be crazy.
Like, it might not be something he wants to do. Of course it won't be, because he's going back 15 years. But artists now have the opportunity to do, if they go, right, I'm an artist, I play techno, but I want to come and do a drum and bass stream. This is the music I'm listening to right now because I haven't played in the club for 6 months.
Mm.
Then do it.
Yeah.
There was the opportunity to just put a Facebook event up, say this is going to happen next Tuesday. Here's a Zoom link or whatever you're going to do. Come and join us.
I love the fact that things happen that quickly now. It's so good. Like, you haven't got to wait for shit. It's just like, it's happening tomorrow. Be there or don't.
And like, if you have 600,000 likes on Facebook and you're only getting 80 likes, which is a lot of the case, then why not do something that's going to bring you in a whole new engagement and go, this is going to be top of my marketing funnel as awareness, and I want to bring in a new audience.
Yeah.
It's that easy now. Like, it might sound so difficult to some people that don't know what a GoPro camera is or how to use one or what a green screen is. But like, there are thousands of creatives out there now who probably do that for just because they love doing that shit.
And also, you can Google most of that shit. Like, you can, like, I've seen people do, like, come, like, and you can and start just doing stuff and then make it better as you're Googling more stuff. It's like, just start doing it, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's where I'm at now. As in, like, I wrote an article on Twitter, which is something I've never wrote before. And I've interviewed the Martinez brothers. I've interviewed Guti. I've interviewed Adam Beyer. I've interviewed Pete Tong. I've never wrote an article on how I use social media, which is mad considering I use social media as a business every day.
I want to talk to you about Twitter because I obviously we're on Twitter. I have been on Twitter for a long time. I feel like it's my weakest platform.
Okay.
I feel like I don't think I've ever got it.
So I used to use Twitter, right, for live sport updates. I used to work in bars and I used to work in events every Saturday night, every Sunday. I'd be at Fuse on a Sunday and I'd want to know what's going on in the soccer Sunday because I'm a football fan. And I used to just log on to Twitter and know that I would go and find, right, Berbatov scored for United or Van Persie scored for Arsenal. That was what I used to use it for 8 years ago. That's how I used it.
Mm.
And it used to be like there'd be people do phone recordings of the goal on front of their Sky Sports, and you get to see the goal while you work rather than waiting for match of the day. That's what people use. But when football disappeared at the beginning of this year, my feed dried up, and it was just people's opinions about COVID. What football's going to do now, where it goes from here. And as I mentioned earlier, it's toxic. There were so many arguments, and I was like, fuck this. Like, I can do something different here with Twitter. I can follow people like me who work in the music industry or work in America where their marketing is next level. And it was also the time when TikTok became UK commercial.
Yeah.
And like, people were talking about these people on TikTok doing long short form content in 15 seconds that YouTubers have been doing for 15 minutes and getting millions of ads revenue. Yeah. So I completely changed my Twitter perspective, and it took me 4 months to even do a tweet. It wasn't like I just started tweeting myself. I just changed the way I consumed my data. And if you go onto Twitter 15 times a day is minimum, which is bare minimum, I think, what a lot of people do anyway, and just scroll, you're taking in so much information.
Yeah.
So I had 4 months sat at home, and I was like, why not learn about what people are doing in marketing at these times? Instead of reading a book, which is obviously great, but there isn't a book on what marketers do during COVID because it's not been written yet. It's February and it's only just becoming a thing. So why not follow the people actually behind the social media platforms who were then, and there's this phrase, I don't know if you've heard it, called share in public. And there are now CEOs out there who are sharing more on their personal social than their actual company is, because they're sharing what their company's doing.
Yeah.
And it's not just, like, if you do that on Instagram, you have to take a picture of behind the scenes in their office, and it's just boring. It's just a picture of you with a new plant.
Yeah.
Not great. So if you share what you're doing as your public plan on Twitter, so you could be, right, this is what data transmission has done during COVID. This is how we've adapted. This is how we supported artists. And that could be your niche.
Yeah.
And other businesses in the music industry could see that and go, wow, that's great. I'm going to follow Graham. So then I took... when it became to the point where I was like, I knew I was going to be made redundant, and I knew that this new business idea, I started planning it. And I was like, I'm a writer. By trade, I write. I'm a copywriter. I don't take selfies on Instagram. I don't, like, that's influencer culture. I'm big on fashion, but I'm not big on sharing what I'm wearing. I'm not going to do that content. I'm going to do social media content on Twitter because I can write and I can do 100 tweets a day or 10 tweets a day. And I'm going to share my experience in social media. And I had one tweet thread that went quite viral, not viral, but like 100 likes, 100 retweets. Cool. And it was my experience of why I've never built my own social media following. And that resonated with people with social media everywhere. It took one retweet from a social media with a decent following or to comment and go, wow, I feel seen. I feel like you've just done 10 years of my career. And that was like, I started to resonate with other social media managers because what's a DJ got to say to me about that? Nothing. And I followed a lot of them, and I used to follow a lot of brands and labels, but I realized that I follow these platforms on every platform anyway. So why not use Twitter to follow marketers or CEOs?
That's a good idea.
You don't need to follow, I worked for Fuse for 2 years, but you don't need to follow Fuse on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and you don't need to follow Enzo on all them platforms. Follow them where you're going to see them, which is probably Instagram now.
Yes.
So if you've got, like, for example, I use Twitter for news. I've got the Sky News app. Why am I following Sky News on Twitter? Like, so I just started thinking like that.
Yeah.
It's like, this is what them platforms want you to do. They want you to follow on every single medium. But actually, if you switch that and take control of your social media and control what you're seeing, instead of just being shown it because you followed them 5 years ago because you wanted to know what was going on with something.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Like, I don't want everyone to follow Socially Sound on every platform. I want you to follow it on the platform you're going to see the content. I'm not going, oh my God, I need 1,000 followers everywhere. I'd rather you subscribe to my newsletter and go that way. Because if that's where you're going to see it, fine. I'm cool with that. I don't need to beg, and I don't need to make a 6-platform strategy. Artists do. At a certain level, they do. But like, this is the best advice I give to artists who like obviously follow you, is you don't need to be active on every single platform at the same time. I went LinkedIn and Twitter first because I wanted to do B2B marketing of my experience to other marketers, to other business owners. And it got me 3 clients over the space of 7 weeks, which was amazing because they saw this Twitter article and a lot of people have commented on it saying, wow, you've just totally, I'm going on Twitter now and I'm reading, hearing your article in my head, which was amazing. That's what it must feel like to have your music played on the radio.
Yeah.
And we're saying in a really geeky way as a writer, you want people to read your words and you want them to understand what you've written. You want them to feel like they've you've changed their life in some way.
100%.
And like, I got these, I did a newsletter and my first one was called Positive Feedback. It wasn't planned. It was just, I did this Twitter article. It got 250 retweets, God knows what else. Got read in 15 different countries. There was people in the Philippines reading my article. And I've got 1,000 Twitter followers.
I love it.
And it's like, that's how far you can go now.
I love it.
Like, if you think, I didn't plan it. It wasn't like I sat down and I was like, right, how can I get 15 people, 15 different countries to read my article? It just happened. And like, that's essentially like, but I did plan what was going to be in the article. It took me 3 days to perfect the Twitter thread. I'm not going to lie, it did.
Yeah.
Because I wanted the Twitter thread to be like, that's like what you do with your poster in your festival. It takes you 3 days. There's no point in working out a half-hour festival poster. You want it to be perfect. And it took me 3 days to do a Twitter thread.
Yeah, it does when I do videos. It's like, the ones that have really, really done well have been thought about and researched and they're the ones that do really pop. Yeah, for me, it was like, right, I want to speak to artists. Right, so I need to be on Instagram and maybe YouTube because it's a much bigger platform. And obviously DT has its own kind of space and whatever it does, you know, generally, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's mine, Instagram and YouTube.
Like your Twitter, if you want to learn how to do more on Twitter, is speak about everything that you're doing on Instagram, just take away the asset.
Yeah.
And make, say you've had an experience, you broke through a new artist and you got him onto Data Transmissions Radio. Mm. What did you do? Break it down into 6 bullet points and break that into a Twitter thread. Because the beauty of a Twitter thread is it's short form and long form content at the same time. It's just words.
When you say Twitter thread, you post the first part and then you reply to yourself, basically.
Yeah, so it gives you an option now. When you do tweet, that button, there's a plus sign next to it. And that's add another tweet.
Okay.
So, for example, I'll take Resident Advisor, who I think Twitter is their poorest platform, right? But it could be their best platform if they broke down what was in their article. Take a feature of an artist. Here's, let's just say Enzo Siragusa, as it's someone that's close to my heart. This is Enzo Siragusa's story. This is how he started Fuse. This is how he started the label. This is his biggest track. This is his, where he's at now. This is how Fuse has done in 10 years. That's 8 tweets. And at the bottom of it, you put the article. Not only have you, that's a call to action. Rather than just going, Enzo Siragusa is the latest article on a breakthrough feature. That's 9 words and I've already scrolled past it because I've read that before. Whereas if you go, Enzo Siragusa was born here. He is one of the most successful artists to come out of the UK in the last 10 years. This is why. And here's 8 reasons why. That's a Twitter thread, short form and long form content combined. And that could gather 100 retweets every single tweet.
Wow.
So all of a sudden you've gone from having 1 tweet that I've scrolled past.
And I guess it shows having more real estate space on the screen as well.
Exactly. So that's the thing. A tweet only takes up 5% of your screen. Mm. A thread, once you open it, takes up your whole screen. And that's what Instagram does with 4x5 content. It's not like, I don't know if you're videoing this to see what viewers, but a landscape video on Instagram now is the most unengaging thing you can do. But if you stand behind a DJ and you want to get the full crowd and you want to get the confetti cannons, you don't video it to go on your Instagram stories. You video it in full width. And that is going to be the biggest adaptation for artists, photographers to focus on next year, is Screen content that is vertical, which takes up your iPhone screen normally on stories, is now the most engaging content on all platforms. And it's not now about how it looks on the desktop, who cares? It's how it's going to look on a mobile, and are they going to sit and watch for 30 seconds?
Yeah.
So there's something to think about. Like, you make and YouTube
it's been annoying that annoyingly most press shots now come as in portrait.
Well, this is it. They're now having to do portrait for social media, and then blogs like Data Transmission have to go, right, I need to put two photos next to each other to fill it in, because that's the depth weight for my article.
Because we've got landscape spaces, because obviously we only want a small picture, we want the rest of it to be content.
And I think I've spoke to a lot of record labels in the last 6 months about how they're doing, what's the biggest changes, and a lot of them have gone from, all we used to do was make a vinyl sleeve and maybe a poster, and maybe if you've, like, that was all you needed a record label 15 years ago. Now you need Instagram stories, you need Facebook cover photo, you need audio clip, you need this. So all of a sudden you've gone from paying a graphic designer 50 quid for an hour to a graphic designer £250 for a whole package. Because your logo needs to be transparent, or it needs to be white, black, because everything now is different. An artist might not share what the label shares because it doesn't fit their grid, or it's pink. And like, or they're like, they all wear black. But there is Tale of Us, for example, have completely taken off everything. When I went for a job interview at Fabric once, and they were like, what is the one thing promoters now have to do? And I was like, you need flyers for your own personal brand, and then you need flyers that fit the artist's personal brand. Because that's how you get them to share it. Fabric is obviously the biggest example because their artwork's sick. But not every club promoter thinks like Fabric. They all think, right, let's say we've got this, every single brand that we have, our club has got different branding. And you have to pay the artwork designer for four different brands. Whereas Fabric just have an in-house designer, and this is everything we do. And because it's Fabric, they can get away with, the artists will share it because the artwork is sick. Or they'll put it on their stories, or they'll put an art picture of them at the head of it, and then they'll swipe and the artwork will be behind it.
Yeah. Or they'll put a picture of themselves last time they played or something, and then it'll be on the carousel.
So like, that is where, and this is something that I know you're big on, is that is the biggest change in social media in the music industry. You now have to make 15 different creatives. You have to make RA size banners, because Mixmag's banners might be different sizes. And it's so long. And what actually gets results? Social media is what gets you results. Or you've got a mailing list of 70K. That's what gets you tickets.
Yeah.
Or you've just done a massive festival campaign and you've used Active Campaign to really be clever with your marketing. And I think that's where a lot of artists are really struggling now. Is because they think, oh my God, I've got to make content for seven different platforms.
A lot of artists, I just tend to focus on, have an 80% of which of their platforms, if they spend got some time at all, have an 80%, and that's where they spend the most of their time. And then the other 20% is kind of like split up around the other.
That's it.
10 platforms, for instance.
You should spend 20% of your time promoting the 80% of what your business is. Like, if you spend 80% of your time in the studio, you should spend 20% of that studio time thinking about how you're going to market the music that you're making. The biggest bit of advice that I give to new artists now, or even big artists, is set a GoPro up on one side and your iPhone up on the other side and film yourself from two angles. And then screen record everything you're doing. And then all of a sudden, you've got three angles of content. Nice. You record all that. If you're in there 8 hours, which is your working day, or you're in there over at night and you're having a few beers with some friends before COVID, record your reactions to the music you are making.
Yeah,
that is as organic content that you can ever get out of a music studio. You can bring a photographer in and you can get a really nice pose picture of you pulling that vinyl out. Which is fine if that's what you're doing, and that's the kind of content you want to create, but it'll get you 70 likes, if that. If you're a big artist, it might get you 10k likes, which is great, but it's just engaging content.
It's not selling records as well. It's not even getting your streams. It's not even getting your streams.
Exactly. So, like, if you get a GoPro and you set, or if you get two GoPros, you set them up in your studio from different angles, and say you're an artist in the studio who doesn't just sit there and go like that. Say you're an artist that stands up and goes, this is fire. This is going to be a bomb. I'm going to send this to this artist now.
Yeah.
That is like reactive content. You're reacting to your own content, and then people are going to react to that content. And that's what's going to get you engagement. I wish I could do that myself, but I'm just a writer, so I can't. Like, I wish I could say, oh my God, best article I've ever written, and people cared. People don't. They care a lot more about the kind of work that I'm doing with other artists, or whether it's like...
I guess you just have to highlight what you're doing. Like, a personal brand for you has definitely got to grow, and it has been growing. Like, I've seen it on Instagram, which is... I've seen it on Instagram, and that's kind of where we've been watching you. It's been really, the content's been really good. I saw you've been using carousels loads, which I love carousels at the moment, and they're great for...
Yeah, so carousels, if you do... Something that I wish Instagram had is metrics of how many people swipe through your carousels.
I agree.
Because it is the most important bit. Because then you know how many carousels work. Yeah. If you only post two, do people go like that, swipe left, swipe right, go back, scroll down, next post? Yeah. Or do they go, oh my God, picture four, sick. Best content. Like, I did a picture of what I'm trying to do with my Instagram is share content from really amazing creators and simplify how they do it. So I did, there's a page called Visual Grams, and they do the same picture of the pyramids in Egypt. They'll find eight creators pictures from Instagram, whether it's a hashtag or a location, that's how they find the content. They'll credit all eight pictures and they'll go, which one's your favorite? 1 to 8. That's the content.
That's cool.
And it gets amazing engagement because you're showing people eight different pictures of the same place from eight different content creators' perspective. If it's a drone shot from right above, if it's right from down and it's a person in front of it, there's eight different ways of showing that content.
That's cool.
Can DJs do that? Not really, unless you do eight videos of the same track that you get tagged in.
You could maybe do it as different. You could do it as different where you'd played. Like, if you played different places and then you'd had obviously different photographers from different places, and you might get a different photo. Yeah, you could
do that. That's really cool. But how many artists have you ever seen do that? I've never seen an artist do that.
No, I haven't.
So, but then that's.
But I like from a carousel point of view, from an artist point of view, is tell us five records that you've And then which one is your favorite, and which one did you done something for you, and that kind of, and that's nice to swipe through and go, oh yeah, because you get all the covers and it looks cool, and especially you can make a play as well.
Like, I use Enzo a lot, but Enzo grew up on Jungle. Yeah. So he could find, that's what's so good about press pieces, where you can do five Jungle records. But like, you can't translate that to Instagram, because it's just, oh yeah, swipe up on his stories and follow the link, read it. But you can do that if you've got the five vinyls. Yes. And you can take five pictures of the vinyls and go, here are the records I chose for this feature on Data Transmission. Go and read why these are my favorite favorite video tracks.
Yeah,
like, they can do that. So that's what I'm trying to do on my Instagram, is I'm trying to show you different ways to use social media. And it doesn't always have to be DJ content related, because as much as my clients are artists, I want you to take inspiration from the pyramids.
Yeah,
I want you to go on travel like you all do every day or every week and go, right, you know what? I'm going to Egypt to play a festival this week. And I love to go to the pyramids. So how can I incorporate lifestyle content into my social?
That's cool. Especially if you are a traveler, that's cool.
Because what so many people miss the mark on socials, this is 30 days in a month, 31 days, 29 days, whatever it is. You do 2 gigs a week. You might post a raw clip once off the back of it when you're touring full time. That might be even the elite. So if you're not at the elite level, what are you filling your days with?
Yeah,
and that's
obviously this podcast is the brand new artists, brand new people it's aimed at those. So it's like, I'm the same. What is your content going to look like
for the next 30 days?
Yeah.
Not. I worked with Monica Cruz, and she was like, I want a content new piece of content a day. I was like, that's a lot. But I now see, and I was probably but she didn't have new content to give me. I had to create it. And that's harder. Whereas if you go, I've got these amazing pictures from when I went to Thailand and I did a 2 week break. Here's, and I want to talk about it. Here's a Dropbox folder full of them. And you're like, great, my work's done. When you physically have to create the content for them, when you've not met them, when you're not in the same city as them, and you're not going on tour with them, that's quite hard to do. But I think if you have a plan, which is what I'm building courses on at the moment, of how to create that plan, I went and did a photo shoot in Manchester because one, I knew I was building a new business and I needed press shots for, say, podcasts like this, or I want to speak on conferences. And they go, where's your press shots? And I go, oh, I'm just a writer, mate. I haven't got any press shots. So I treated it.
Where's your press kit? You're a brand now.
I'm a personal brand. Yeah. And but when I went and did that photo shoot, I did him a brief. And I was like, I wear Doc Martens every day when I go out, or Vans. And the biggest, like, you look at Doc Martens' socials and it's all user-generated content. They don't even need to do photo shoots anymore.
Nice.
It's everyone who's like, there's a million followers on that platform. There's probably 5 million, 50 million people in the world wearing Doc Martens who all take pictures of it and tag Doc Martens. If I'm that social media at Doc Martens, I'm in heaven, because you just need to. Whereas, and that's what artists are like. They've got all these art people on them. I would love to wake up as a DJ, right, and go on my Instagram stories the morning after I've just played the sickest gig of my life and see the reaction that I get and how many notifications you've got and how much free content you could potentially get out of that. Yeah. But if you're not that anywhere near that level, you've got to create 365 pieces of content a year. And that's just one picture for each platform every day.
Yeah, or you've got to make bigger content and repurpose it into smaller pieces, which is I'm well hot on. Like, make a long piece, repurpose it into 40 pieces of small pieces. And, you know, that's like a live stream mix. Live stream video mix, that can make you 10 pieces of content quite easily.
And also as well, if you only play two tracks of your own music in that live stream, you cut it down into 4 minute content. That artist who you're playing the music from can then share it for you.
Yeah, I totally would give it out. Like, I totally would go, I played that guy's track, message him, I played your track, here's a video.
Yeah, and one campaign that I wanted to do with Enzo, which actually never went over the line, was he did a live stream for Mixmag, digital live stream, but all unreleased tracks that were coming on vinyl in the next 12 months.
Sick.
And the plan was to micro content that all out and send out a strategy to all the artists and go, look, here's Enzo playing on your track. Whenever it comes out, tag Enzo. And then all of a sudden, other people are tagging Enzo from their socials and his socials grow, which is great. But then they were already one step ahead of me. Like, the artists were already watching it. They'd already cut it. They'd already posted it and gone, thanks Enzo for sharing my track. Cause it's that big of a deal to them. And actually, like, my strategy got ripped up in the end. I was like, oh, well, I wanted everyone to send it out and do it on my bullet points. But they were so on it that they could rip that content and go, thanks so much Enzo for sharing my track. This is forthcoming on this label in 2 weeks or 6 months. They were well ahead of me, which is great. And that's what I think a lot of artists struggle with at the beginning, is they don't realize that there are a million other social media platforms that they can share that live stream for you.
Mm.
And that's like thinking of, like, narrow-minded, of just looking in front of you and then it's looking 360. And it's only when you get someone like you or me who shows you that idea, then it makes sense. Because you might think, I've used Hot Since 82 as a really good example of an artist with killer social. And he's just done a live stream in his house from Yorkshire, in his kitchen, on beautiful marble templates. He's got skulls everywhere, flowers.
Nice.
And it looks aesthetically pleasing. Nice pastel colours all next to each other. He's wearing a nice pastel t-shirt, which matches the aesthetic of his room, which is obviously his very image focused as an artist. But then he's used Mixmag as a cross post. Not as it going on his Facebook, his YouTube, where he's already got God knows how many subscribers. He's using Mixmag too. And that's just having an artist manager.
Yeah.
And that's like going, what? And like, if you're Mixmag and Hot Since 82's manager drops in your inbox, why wouldn't you want to take a live stream from Hot Since 82?
Yeah, but I also think there's like, if you're a smaller artist, I definitely think there's some other places you can, like the cross-posting, I think there's other places where you could cross-post it.
Yeah.
Like small wins, you know, like you've got a track coming out and you speak to the label and you say, can I cross post to yours, to your pages as well?
Yeah.
Because that's some using their reach and using being part of that label, or you've played for an event before. Can I do a live stream for you? Or you know.
Yes. So Subban, just before, Subban's a lucky fucker, right? Before lockdown, his last gig was Thailand. And that club in Thailand had to cancel all its bookings. And the promoter had this house that the artist stayed in, and it was this beautiful villa in Thailand. And all of a sudden, Subban just went and got the equipment that was in the club. Because the promoter said to Subban, do you want to just stay here? Why would you want to go back to the UK? He stayed there for 14 weeks.
Fuck's sake.
And he used that time to go and get some equipment and just use the Thailand jungle that he, wherever, if they have a jungle or beach, whatever he was in front of, to create music. And then the promoter was like, I've got a podcast that I do. Do you want to do a live stream from my club, which I've got this beautiful outdoor terrace of all the music that you've made? So Ben was like, great, what a great idea. And then he messaged me on WhatsApp and was like, I've got this playlist or this podcast of this pre-recorded stream. What can I do with it? Do I put it out on my socials? Do I offer it to a brand? And I was like, mate, this is your step-by-step plan. And I did that for free for him, because I was just like, send me the pictures and the video recording. I was like, this is sick.
Yeah.
And like, not every artist has the opportunity to do a live stream in Thailand and in a beautiful garden.
Nice.
But you can create that in your own way. Like, there's an artist called Ash, and he's got 400 million streams on YouTube. And he just, like, that's his platform. That's where he wants you to. And I've never seen him on a festival lineup in the UK. Maybe it's just because he's more like, his artists might be in completely different countries. But you can, like, maybe that's what's going to come next, is going to, like, all these artists who we've not heard of, who are doing incredible on big platforms, are going to be the next wave of artists.
I really hope so. Like, I really hope, like, Suat, who's been doing those walking ones where he's had a million streams of just him walking around playing, walking around the streets DJing.
So that's, like, insane, right? But when you think about how simple that is to do, you've just got to connect it to yourself. And if you've got, if you're good with a pair of hands, if you're good with your hands, I'm not, I could never do that. But that's just one idea that's crazy. But it's actually simplicity, so easy to do.
Yeah.
And
finding your space as well, like, not just live streaming. If you're doing live stream, for instance, and we're talking about live streams, is not just doing the same evening live stream. We've got, like, finding a space in the day which just makes more sense to you. Like, one of my guys, he can't live stream at night because his kids are back and his wife's at home. And I was like, well, why don't you just do a lunchtime stream and just, we'll make a brand out of it and we'll make it cool. And it can be like a get off your desk and chairs and you know, a bit of exercise at lunchtime, or we'll do it at lunchtime. Why do you have to do it at 8 p.m. every night?
8 p.m., yeah.
Why the hell? Let's just try it and see what happens.
This is the thing that people don't quite grasp with live streams, is because the word live is in it, they want as many people as possible to watch it live.
Mm.
But actually, the value comes once it's pre-recorded and back on YouTube, because then it's like, it's the same build once, sell twice campaign, build that model that every musician has. You put the music online and it's there forever. Live streams are exactly the same.
The on-demand factor is the one, really.
Yeah, and like, if you get to the point of, like, there's an artist in Mixmasters who I'm doing a course for, and I use him as a really good example. I was doing audits for their socials and I didn't know who he was. And I went onto his socials and he had a YouTube link in his bio, clicked on it, and I was like, wow, London YouTube, rooftop London stream with the Shah sunset background. 38,000 streams, and it's got 700 subscribers.
Wow.
And it's like, but he's just had the idea to do it. And he's gone, right, I live in this building, or I live next to this building, and I've got rooftop access. Like, I live in Warrington, where I've got a backyard that's not, that looks like Coronation Street. I've not got a beautiful setting of a live stream, but you can make it into something if you can.
Yeah.
Like, you just got to think about it and go, right, I'm actually going to, it's like your work desk. I'm going to work at this desk for 6 months and I need it to be right. If your DJ setup, is that your work desk, which it is, what can you do to make this look nice on a camera?
Exactly.
Like, I think I watched a Mall Grab YouTube when Boiler Room started doing the isolation streams. Mall Grab's house is beautiful. like, and I don't know whether he's just moved everything that's in his house into a cambric, like, or whether he's like, that's how it is and that's where he creates every day. But like, if you've got that kind of, why not go to IKEA and go, right, I'm going to be doing this for 6 months. This is as important to me as food is.
Yeah.
And you're going to prioritize this for the next 6 months. And you're going to speak to someone like me or you and go, right, I've got this YouTube idea. What do I actually do with it? And that £100 or whatever it is for our consultancy, like, selling ourselves short a bit there, I think. But like,
definitely. way short, definitely. Kind of.
Like, that to me is as valuable as buying a Roland piece of kit now.
Yeah, and I think just also there's the don't stop yourself from starting because it's not completely. I'd rather people just start and suck it and see a little bit and then make it better. Like it was good last week. I had 50 people watching. What can I change or what can I improve to make it better for next week?
Exactly.
And because I've got a bit more time, it's like what can I watch it back and go, right, the background looked okay, the lighting wasn't great, or can I add a light, or can I do this, or can I get on Amazon and buy something else, you know?
Exactly, you know. And I think, like, one thing I would say to artists who are thinking about live streaming or thinking about doing a new radio show, right, and you're scared that it's going to cost you £100 to go and buy a microphone or to go and get the bit of kit that you need to make it correct, like that one bit that's missing. That could be the difference between you having 5 gigs next summer and 25 gigs next summer. But now that this is there as a thing, like Twitch, why shouldn't Dirty Bird carry on Twitch?
I agree.
Why shouldn't it be something that they do on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday?
I agree.
Before the clubs. Like, why can't they do it?
And tour less.
Because Dirty Bird now, because they've got such a big audience, could do a Twitch pre-party from 7 till 11 online and go to the club afterwards. Don't matter what city the club is in.
Yeah.
They can do it live. Yeah. And I think that might be like the Mambo pre-party to Ibiza club night is a great example of how you can do 2 GDS sets in a day. So if clubs now, there's record stores to like do a record store, come and hang out at 10 o'clock, 9 o'clock, come and have a drink in a bar, because my record store has a bar, which a lot of them are starting to now do. Why can't artists play 2 sets in a day and live stream at 8 o'clock at night and then get you to come and do the club at 10?
Exactly.
Like, that is something that I think a lot of management companies should be thinking about. I know that artists don't always want to do that. And I know artists have to fly and travel and get there at 12 o'clock at night. But if the opportunity is there, like if you're playing in your home city, there's no reason why you can't do a live stream 4 till 8 in the afternoon and then go and play in the club 10 till 12.
Exactly.
And it's because now it's so ingrained in culture.
I think it was before where it was, if we do a live stream before, then why would you go and buy it? But now you can literally pop up and go, I'm doing one now 4 till 8 and have it planned, but announce it at 3 and then people
will just watch it. The day before. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's like, I think before this happened, people saw Boiler Room as the only place you could go and do a live stream because it had like awareness that they were going to bring you followers. It was going to introduce you to a brand new audience. Whereas now live streams are probably the biggest way to introduce your own fan socials to new audiences.
And also, reward your fans. Reward your audience for being thankful for being your audience, you know, for being on board, you know.
Like, that's why I think, like, 2 artists that I've broke through, and I know they did it at a very big time when female artists, bookers wanted to do a lot more of it. And maybe if there wasn't that mentality, Charlotte and Amelie wouldn't have done it. But they're that good and they're that talented and they've got the image and they've done live streams because they've grew up with live streams. The last 10 years, five years, Boiler Room has been the biggest thing that you can ever do as an artist. They had that feel. If you want to break through a new artist, get them on Boiler Room. And then, whereas like Charlotte DeWitt was doing radio streams live, and that was how she got a residency. She was so, Facebook Live or YouTube Live was there for her at the right time. And it's there for every single person now listening. It's there for you and you can do it. Like Luciano did a live stream every single day.
I know, that was amazing.
And like, why should...
And so did Fatboy Slim's been doing a lot as well. Yeah. If they can do it, then any fucker can do it.
Exactly. And I think, like, if you're coming back off this now and you're like, right, I listen to this podcast whenever this goes out, I look back at my studio and go, actually, if there are no clubs until January, no clubs till February, and if you're an emerging artist who's trying to break through and you're not going to have gigs maybe until May, if you do a radio show now, every single week from now until May, you could potentially do 30 gigs.
Yeah, we're actually doing that now on Data Transmission. So just as we so on our Mixed Cloud, every night of the week from 7 o'clock, we've got one of my artists. They're doing it, it's the same person every Monday, same person every Tuesday. So I'm giving a space to brand new artists to take over Mixed Cloud to build their audiences. So we're recording this today on a Thursday. Thursday night is Lisa Jane. She plays disco. And she's building an audience, basically. She's been doing it for like 6-7 weeks now. She's got a gig every Thursday on our platform, and she does it from her home. And it's, you know, and she'll be continue doing it every Thursday because it's great fun. It's great 2 hours of entertainment.
And like, obviously, when I worked for Fuse, the Rinse FM show was a great way for Enzo to break new music. Mm. And it was a great way for me as a social media manager, whichever artist it was, it's like, hey, XY DJ, like, Archie played Enzo played your music last night on the show. Here's a 30-second introduction, yeah. And here's a minute clip of the thing. Will you put this on your stories or your Twitter?
Yeah.
And like, that was just me as a social media manager. So if you're that artist doing the Data Transmission live stream every Thursday, every single Friday morning, the first thing you should do when you wake up is, hey, XYDJ, I played your track on my radio show last night. I really love what you're doing. Could you potentially like follow it on SoundCloud, or could you potentially send me some new music over the next month so that I can also continue to support your music? Yeah. If you do that with 10 tracks a week minimum, because your radio show, if it's 60 minutes long, that's 10 tracks. If you do that every single Friday, your email list could go from 25 people to 150 people in a month. It could go from 150 people to 700 in 3 months. And if you treat...
And even your reach would grow, because if you're sending the clips as well, if you cut the clips up as well and give them the videos...
Exactly. You've just got to have the confidence to get on iMovie or get on whatever platform you're comfortable doing and learning how to chop. Yep. Because it's... If a DJ, right, can make a 10-minute track layered with these synths and drums and loops and God knows what, they can learn how to do iMovie, and they can learn how to cut up your own music on your own mix. And if you can't do that, I'm sorry, you're not going to go anywhere. Because I couldn't do that 3 years as a social media manager, and I had to sit myself down and go, I can't carry on paying videographers how to do this. This is so simple. And it's something I now do as a standard package to what I sell to clients. I might not be able to design that amazing Facebook cover photo for you, but I can break down your music, and that's something that you don't have to do yourself. But if you haven't got me or you haven't got you, then learn how to do it, because it is so valuable.
100%. Thank you, Andrew. Thanks for joining me, my friend. This has been so interesting. There's been some great tips for myself, which have been lovely. Thank you.
Yeah.
And it's been really, I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Pleasure.
Thanks for joining me on the podcast.
Can I do a plug?
Go for it.
Andrew Lee's 89 on Instagram and Twitter. Come and find me.
There you go. Go and find him. Go and watch his content. It's really good. Thanks, mate. You.
Pleasure.
Thanks again for listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. If you have, please go. If you're listening to an Apple podcast, please go and give it a rating. Give it a thumbs up. Share it. It really helps the podcast grow on Apple Podcasts. And goes up the chart, which means we can get bigger guests with bigger numbers, and which gives you more information and more tips. Thanks so much again for joining us. I hope you enjoyed it. I'll see you next time. I've been Graham Farmer. Bye.